Today's episode is brought to you by Harrys.com. Use promo code LOC at checkout to save $5 off your first purchase.
Congratulations, boy.
Many gave their lives that we might stand here once again, united in the government of a lawful republic.
Gaius Octavian was henceforth to be regarded, for all intents and purposes, as my lawful son.
Gaius Octavian Caesar.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to the Life of Augustus Caesar episode. What episode is it, Ray?
Sorry, I was on mute.
Never mind. We've got a lot to get through, but first, I want you to know, Ray, I'm having a fantastic cigar as we record. I'm out on the deck. You're out there in buttfuck Virginia with your snakes. Yep, it's good to be king.
Well, I was just going to...
Yep, we'll get to that in a moment, Ray. Have you done your homework, by the way, for this episode? Speaking of homework...
Yeah. Yeah, teacher. Yeah.
All right. So where did we leave last episode? That's right, Caesar was about to cross a bridge. Do we know why he was going to cross the bridge? Ray?
So Augustus Caesar has come to a bridge, he's looking at it, he doesn't know whether to cross over it or not, he doesn't know what the fuck is on the other side, whether it's a trap or...
Sorry, man. I had that queued up. Why have you stopped talking?
I thought you were going to interrupt.
No, I would never interrupt you, Ray. Why would you think that?
Well, I...
hey, listen, I've got a song.
Well, I'm glad one of us is happy, enjoying that.
Welcome back to the real Augustus series, everyone. A little intro there, prepared with love, he assures me, by Rob Irwin, one of our earliest longtime supporters. Rob has a number of very successful podcasts in his own right that he has done. You know, you may not think so listening to that, but he actually... does a good podcast. He's got his latest show he started. It's the Doctor Who show. I went and listened to the first episode when it came out a few weeks ago. His episodes are 3 hours long. I swear to God, no lie. But it's not just what? Shut up.
I was going to say one show is not even 1 hour long. So how can an episode be 3 hours long?
You mean an episode of Doctor Who, isn't it? Yeah.
Right.
No, it's as he says in his email to me, it takes the form of an audio fanzine. So there are multiple segments from multiple contributors, just like articles in a printed fanzine. So yeah, it's 3 hours long. Find it at dwshow.net. There's like a million Doctor Who podcasts. So if you go to iTunes and look for Doctor Who podcasts, you probably might struggle to tell which is which. I did, but if you go to the dwshow.net, you'll get the right link. Rob is a massive Doctor Who nerd, as are all of his contributors. I was trying to elbow my way onto the show until I thought I just can't.
Can't get through.
No, I just couldn't keep up with these guys, man. Like, they're serious. You know, I've watched Doctor Who for 40 years. I love it. But, I couldn't. I can't compare with the...
That says something.
These guys are the equivalent of Star Trek nerds for Doctor Who, man. Like, you know.
Right, yeah. Right.
But, okay. Good show. So thank you for that funny intro, Rob. I listened to it the other day and I went, fuck, he nailed us, man. He nailed our formula. They've worked it out, Ray. Somebody's worked out our formula.
They have. Yeah, now we're going to have to switch it up. I'm going to have to come in even more low-key to throw it off.
I feel like Napoleon at the Battle of Waterloo when Wellington mm-hmm. is forming squares. And I'm like, oh, shit, he's worked out. He's worked it out. He's found, like, the secret key.
What do I do?
Yeah. How are you, buddy?
Well, up until you played that, I was doing okay. A little sad. Tear-stained T-shirt, but I'll be okay.
He's pretty much endowed you pretty well. I gotta say.
Yeah, I don't can't really. I haven't really thanked him yet for that. I'll find a way. Yeah,
come out to Oz, and we'll go down to Sydney, and we'll thank Rob in person. just be careful. He might have a couple of sonic screwdrivers tucked away in the inside of his jacket, though. That he'll
gotcha
out and go at you with. Or a toy Dalek or something. I'm good. Thanks for asking. smashed the screen of my iPhone a couple of days ago. Got to take it into Apple after we finish this today. Get that replaced. Yeah. Anyway, Fox walked up to me yesterday, wiped a small ball of poo across my leg and went, uh-oh. So, yeah, there's that. He's at that stage now.
Hold on, question. Who's poo?
Yeah,
his?
That's a legitimate question. Yeah. I think it was his. Hard to tell. I sent it off to CSI Brisbane for DNA analysis. But, yeah.
Doesn't really matter at the end of the day, I guess.
He thinks it's good fun when he shits his nappy now to stick his hands down it, dig something out and go, oh, yeah. Did I just take a dump? Let me just check. Yeah.
Eureka. Yep, I discovered something.
I did.
Oh, it's only going to last for another year or so, and then you'll be fine.
Yeah, he'll grow out of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we got a lot to do today.
Yeah.
Last time on the show, the last episode was the Stephen Saylor thing. Some people said it was great. Some people said they wanted to come and punch us. But we did the best with what we had based on.
Right, and we apologized. It was totally on our end. We apologized. Oh. It was the internet in my room because I didn't pay for the good stuff. So, Stephen Saylor, I am terribly sorry.
It was not deliberate, but we made the rather than just scrap it, we tried to make the best with what we had because that's what we do. We don't have a lot to offer, ladies and gentlemen. We're not very smart. We're not very funny. We're not very good looking. We're not hung very well. We just make the best with what we've got.
We're one for five. Yeah.
What's the one?
We're doing the best we can with what we've got. Oh, that's it.
I thought you were going to say we're nice. I was going to say, well, you're nice.
No. I'm kind of nice.
We're half.
I heard things from Rob, I'm pretty nice until then.
So the last time Anthony and Octavian did a deal with Sexy P, they're all happy now. We have four triumvirs. It's going to be peace in our time forever and ever and ever, amen. Part of the deal was that the proscribed who were still alive got to return to Rome, going to get some of their money back.
Mm-hmm.
Only a little bit, but you get some. But the problem is the triumvirs are still running out of money. This is very expensive, having to pay out all of the returned veterans and take all the land and settle them and all this kind of jazz. So, and they had to pay out Sextus like 70 million sesterces, I think, and they're having to pay out all the proscribed 1/4 or something of what their original net worth was.
Right, 25%, yep.
Dio says, since the expenditures were growing far greater than before, and the revenues, which were in any case insufficient, because the revenues are normally taxes from the outlying provinces, and they've kind of just raped those provinces to build their armies for the Civil War, so they got nothing.
Yes. Thrice over.
Mm, the revenues came in at this time in even smaller amounts by reason of the factional discord, so they introduced certain new taxes. Now, we've seen this before, where they've tried to introduce new taxes, usually doesn't go well. And so, you know, what they do is they go, oh, shit, you know, that didn't go so well. What do we do? I know. Let's introduce new taxes.
Right.
But Dio continues, and they enrolled ever so many men in the Senate, not only from among the allies or else soldiers or sons of freedmen, but even slaves.
What?
They were like Oprah. They were like, you're in the Senate.
You're a senator. Yes! You're a senator. You're a senator. You're all fucking senators now. Pay.
Imagine Cicero and Cato, if they were still alive,
they would shat themselves, not unlike Fox.
They'd be pulling
pick
a
it
fox.
Out and throw it at people. Yeah. Exactly. They'd be pulling a fox. Pulling it from their pants.
Well, other people are holding up their end for them. He says that, at any rate, one Maximus, when about to become quaestor, was recognized by his master and hailed away. And while in his case immunity was granted him for having dared to stand for office, yet another slave who was detected while serving as a praetor was hurled down the rocks of the Capitol, having first been freed that his punishment might take on the proper dignity.
Right.
You want to be free? Sure, you can be free. Here's how free you can be. You're free to fly off the top of the Capitol rocks.
Well, none of the citizens were allowed to have their back touched by a whip. That was one of the advantages of being a Roman citizen. So since he is free, his back is saved. It's every other bone and muscle in his body that's going to suffer as he bounces down the stairs or whatever.
So I've been hired by employers from time to time. And when I've become hired, I've thought to myself, really, they didn't really do a good job on background checks. Now, these guys... I don't think they'd invented the concept of background checks here.
No.
Existing slaves being elected as praetor and quaestor. Praetor and quaestor. Dio continues that they appointed a lot of new consuls after they do this peace deal with Sextus. He says, on the same plea, they also appointed various magistrates for a number of years ahead, including the consuls for 8 full years.
Good gracious.
Thus regarding some of those who had cooperated with them and winning the favor of others.
Ah.
And they did not choose 2 annual consuls only, as had been the custom, but now for the first time chose several. And these on the very day of the elections. Even before this time, to be sure, some had held office after others who had neither died nor been removed because of disenfranchisement or for any other reason, but all such persons had become officials presumably in accordance with the decision of the magistrates who had been chosen to office for the entire year, whereas now nobody was chosen to serve for a year, but various sets of officials were appointed for the different portions of the entire period. And the men first to enter upon the office of consul. I just heard your zipper go down, right? What the fuck? I know that the idea of being a consul turns you on, but B,
I can defend myself.
How did I hear that? Where is your microphone?
Okay, here's what happened.
Was it your zipper or somebody standing very close to your face where I assume your microphone would be?
Right,
Jessica. is Jessica doing a home call? Booty call?
Maybe. Because of Rob, I am never going to put my microphone on mute again. And hey, what I do while you're reading out long passages to myself is nobody's business but mine. All right?
All right.
I like the sound of your voice. I really, really like it.
Okay, go back and listen to that, folks. Tell me if it was just me, but that was a zip. I know the sound of a zipper quickly.
That was a zipper. Yeah. That was a zipper. Mm. It was a zipper. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To my jacket.
Oh.
It's very cold here right now.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Where was I up to? Consoles, something. The citizens of the empire knew few or none of them and therefore called them the lesser consuls. So why do you think they would be appointing multiple consuls for a single term, Ray, for a year?
Well, it's either financial reasons or are they trying to placate as many people as they can? Are they trying to reward people like Caesar did? I don't know, but this is just showing you how truly far everything, all the institutions and the customs that made Rome what it was, have totally been wiped off the face of the earth. Please tell us why.
I don't know why. I was asking you because you're far more knowledgeable about such matters.
I mean, I can just picture this. Ray and Cam, you will be consuls on Tuesday. Fred and Barney, you will be consuls on Wednesday. And we've already run out of people. Ray and Cam, congratulations. You will again be consuls on Friday. I mean, what the hell?
Well, we know that once you were consul, it was like being president. You got to be called that for the rest of your life. You had some sort of long-term benefit of being consul that you could play upon for the rest of your life.
You're pro-consul for the rest of your life, yeah.
Yeah, and it came with benefits. A bit like having American Express.
Yes.
This episode of Life of Caesar is not brought to you by American Express. Lift your fucking game, American Express.
Yes, there we go.
So maybe we should get them to sponsor the Cold War show.
There we go.
Now, I like that. Sextus, after they did this deal, went back to Sicily because he was supposed to be governor there for 5 years, along with Sardinia, Corsica, and the Peloponnese, although, according to at least one of the books I read, it's very unlikely he ever got an opportunity to go to the Peloponnese.
He gave it a miss.
Yeah. Because he was kind of busy.
Yeah.
As we'll see.
Well, it's not like they gave him Corsica, Sicily, and Sardinia. I mean, he pretty much already had it in his possessions. But one part of that peace treaty that I really like, and again, this is from Dio, Sextus will not receive deserters, nor acquire more ships, nor keeping any garrisons in Italy, but bending his efforts to secure peace on the sea for the peninsula and sending a stated amount of grain to the people of the city. They limited him to this period of time because they wished it to appear that they were holding merely a temporary and not an unending authority. So when they made an agreement with him, it was for X amount of years because I guess Octavian and Mark Antony didn't want people thinking, oh, we're just going to keep power forever. No, let's just do this in blocks of, 5 years or whatever. So no one gets the idea that we will keep power forever. But of course, everybody had probably figured out that's exactly what they were going to do. So they've got this deal. Sextus is not allowed to do anything to threaten further Rome, and Octavian is going to use some of the planks of this agreement to justify his attacking when war does come back.
Mm-hmm. Always good when you're constructing a peace treaty to build in terms that you think will be easily broken by the other party. You got an out clause. Reminds me of that old Steve Martin sketch where he takes hostages. You ever heard that?
No, I don't think so.
I'd love to play the whole thing. Old Steve Martin sketch from the 70s when you're doing his live stand-up. He goes, I've got something that I've wanted for a long time. I got myself some hostages. Yeah. I've issued my demands. I want something like $1 million in cash, a fully fueled jet. And I want the letter M struck from the English alphabet. You always need to put in one outrageous demand. $1 million in cash, as if. Anyway.
Yeah, but that's exactly what they did. So, again, and I just have to ask this question. We don't have to debate it now or whatever, but I have to ask this question. You've got this peace treaty. Mark Antony is in the east. Caesar has Italy, and Lepidus, we'll just forget Lepidus for a second, and everybody else has. Sextus has got his three main islands. He's got his ship. I think he's got a part of North Africa. I can't really remember. But the point is, they have an agreement, and they all have peace in their time, and everybody's got their own army. So if they want, they're all relatively young men, they can keep this status quo for decades if they want and enjoy having power, being in charge, and no one can challenge them. But no one is satisfied with that. It's not enough for these people. Is it their mentality? Is it the way they were raised? Do they not trust each other? Does it simply come down to, he might betray me one day, so I have to plan to attack him? I mean, why isn't anybody satisfied with these very impressive careers that they have at this incredibly young age by Roman standards?
Yeah, it's a really great question, Ray.
So I don't.
I think it's the trust thing. I think as we go through these next couple of episodes, we're just going to see that there are grounds for mistrust. There are rumors that are constantly being spread about this guy's trying to buck you up behind your back. And it's just, it's nasty, man. So they're always, it's kill or be killed kind of stuff here, you know?
Yeah, I guess it's like one day he might come after me. It might be 5 years. He's going to come after me. So I'm going to start working on coming after him now. Well, I'm not going to wait 5 years.
One day the other three of them might gang up on me.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. That's a very good point.
It's like the five families, man. New York Mafia. They're trying to...
You know, there's a reason. There's a reason the descendants of Rome walk around with their shirts half done, the hair chest sticking all out, the gold chains all coming out, and they wouldn't hesitate to kill you and then go eat some pasta. I think there's a connection between this mentality and what we see in the mafioso today.
Yeah.
But don't tell them I said that.
And, of course, the mafioso aren't all Italians. Lots of mafias, man. Anyway.
Well, I'm just worried about the ones mafia. With the...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, Sextus stays in Sicily. Octavian, now depending on which account you read here, some say that Octavian went to Gaul to put down a small rebellion. Others say that he sent Agrippa to Gaul and he stayed in Italy. Which did you go with?
Yeah, I read that he sends Agrippa to Aquitania. Or whatever it's called back then, because there's an uprising, and there's also going to be some Germans who are going to get trouble, because for a while, Caesar's going to have to be on his own and preparing for whatever he's going to do until Agrippa can come back, having subdued those. And I just have to say this real quick, from what little I've read, and I'm sure we'll find out more later, but from what little I've read, Agrippa is basically another Caesar. He can do everything, and he can do everything well. He just wasn't born with the right blood. He wasn't born in the right class, with the right family. But other than that, I mean, I think we're looking at another potential Caesar here. But for whatever reason, and I kept reading about him, and I couldn't find it, he just chose to stay absolutely loyal to Caesar. Maybe he just knew where his bread was buttered, and he was content, whatever. I have no idea. But if he had been born in a higher class, socioeconomic class, I think we're easily looking at another Caesar here. But he's gone away into Gaul dealing with problems.
Yeah, over the course of the next few episodes, finally we're going to get an opportunity to talk more about Marcus Agrippa. As many people listening to this will already know, he is considered to be Octavian's secret weapon. Pretty much all of the success that Octavian has through his entire adult life pretty much comes down to Agrippa.
He's the muscle.
Well, he's the brain.
But the brain, the muscle, too, yeah.
He's the politician. As you say, he's an incredibly, incredibly impressive character. And, I'll get into his bio a little bit later on. I've got a whole bunch of notes on that. But, yeah. And I've got some interesting insights into why he did what he did from Dio, I think, or Suetonius or someone.
Okay, yeah, cool. And I just think he's got the coolest name, Agrippa. Yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So he gets sent, as you say, to Aquitania. Now, remember with this deal of Brundusium, the Treaty of Brundusium that the boys just all signed, Caesar's seizure of Gaul after the death of Calenus had been formally recognized. Calenus had been one of Antony's guys, had, I think, like 11 legions there. And Octavian, after Calenus died, rushed in, young Calenus. Kid Calenus was there, and he's like, "Hey, Octavian!" And Octavian was like, "Give me all your troops." And he's like, "Oh, okay then.
I'm 2 years older than you."
But Gallia Comata, long-haired Gaul, as the Romans knew it, had been largely neglected economically and politically since Caesar had conquered it, which was now almost two decades ago.
Wow.
And, they'd started to go, you know what? Don't think the Romans are ever coming back. I think they forgot about us.
We've seen the last of those Romans.
Yeah, maybe they all died. What? We don't know.
Chlamydia. Yeah. Who knows? Who knows?
Chlamydia?
I was reaching. I apologize if I offended anybody who is suffering from that. I'm sorry.
Can you die from chlamydia? I don't
know. Maybe. I have no idea. Untreated. I got an itching. Anyway, I don't know. We'll find out.
Do that zipper back up and stop scratching. You make it worse.
Look, you've got your hobbies. Go ahead.
So, there was a tribal confederation living along the western shore that rose up that year. Mm-hmm. And this is partially because Octavian had taken control of these 11 legions from Calenus and pulled them into Rome. So they were like, hey, they've all gone. Woo! We're the champions. So he had to send Agrippa to go and take care of that. We don't know a lot about what happened. We've got a bit of detail we can talk about later, but we know it went well because, as we'll say many times, Agrippa is a fucking badass. Now, around about this time also, Octavian changed his name again.
Aww.
Do you know what he changed it to, Ray?
No, tell me.
He changed it from Gaius Julius Caesar to mm-hmm. Imperator Caesar Divi Filius.
Oh my God.
Commander Caesar, the god son, or son of a god. Commander Caesar, the son of a god, became his official title / name. Now, people that have been with us from the beginning know that Imperator is roughly equivalent to Commander under the Roman Republic. I think it had to be granted to you by your troops.
Yeah, you would win in a battle on the field and then they would start hailing you Imperator. And but, you know, when you're 24 and you own one third of everything, you can name you can put whatever you want on your license plates. You can do that.
Yeah, and I'm sure it wasn't too hard to go up to one of your commanders and go...
Say Imperator.
Read what's written on this. Read what's written on this card.
I have to tell you this real quick.
What's that sticking in my back? Don't worry about it. Don't worry. Just read what's in this card. Don't turn around. Don't have I'll to turn around.
I twist it. I'm going to put a picture on the Caesar Facebook. My wife has entered me into a 6-mile race Saturday. And so for the name, I put just like he did with Caesar's name, I put your name. Oh God, I'll put a picture of something like Divi Cam something, the son of the Holy Cam or something like that. Anyway, I'll put a picture on Facebook so you can see that. But I'm going to be running through the streets of Richmond with that on. That's what you mean to me.
Right. Is this because you think that if people think that you're actually me, they will chase you with guns and you'll run faster?
That is part of the strategy, as I like to say. Yeah, up until the point I have a heart attack. But yeah, that's part of the plan.
That's good going, man. I hope you don't die.
Yeah, well, it's against my will. Anyway.
I'd just like to announce that I'll be holding auditions for my new partner probably in the next week or so. So just email your resumes. I will be doing background checks, unlike the triumvirates as they're appointing people to the Senate.
A caveat, Rob cannot have my job.
Okay. I don't know. He does a pretty good impersonation, I think. He
a little too well.
People would not be able to tell the difference.
Ouch. Mm. Anyway, where were we?
So Imperator Caesar Divi Filius, but we're going to keep calling him Octavian for the time being because I'm not going to call him Imperator. Fuck that shit.
It's a mouthful.
Now the Aquitanians, we talked about that. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering, though, if Agrippa's traveling to Gaul with a copy of Julius Caesar's Gallic commentaries with him reading about how he defeated them. I mean, let's keep in mind, too, that it's highly probable that Agrippa knew Caesar himself. He was probably with him on campaign in Spain or Africa during the latter stages of the Civil War when he would have been 16, 17, which is probably how he ended up with training mm-hmm. with Octavian. They were friends, but Caesar, I think, according to some of the old sources, liked the cut of his jib. And said, you get Apollonia and train with Octavian while I get ready. Right. We'll all meet again in Parthia and it'll be lovely. So he had been around Caesar. He'd seen him on the field, and I'm pretty sure he's reading the Gallic commentaries on the way there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to say. I put my money down on he's in a litter, probably like Caesar, reading the book, going over it, making notes himself.
Now, I seem to remember that the Gauls were supposed to get some benefits out of subjecting themselves to Roman rule. But apparently, as yet, they had not seen any of those benefits. A bit like the people in Iraq, who the Americans said, "Yes, everyone celebrate. America is here. Saddam is gone. It's all going to be good now."
Let me see you do the electric slide. There was one benefit the Gauls had gotten in the last 10 or so years, the distinct lack of the Statioism being brought to their door. As far as I know, and the Romans were too busy fighting each other, so hopefully they weren't slaughtering villages and raping cows in whatever order they saw fit.
Well, something must have happened with the Germans crossing the Rhine, because as you briefly mentioned, Agrippa pulls a Caesar and builds a bridge over the Rhine. We don't know. Unfortunately, the sources don't really cover any of this in any detail.
Right.
But
I have to ask about this. And we know the answer, we can talk about it later, or we don't know the answer. I wonder if some of the details of Agrippa weren't covered because he was number two. He wasn't number one. I mean, as much as Octavian likes him, you can't have him shine too brightly. So I wonder if it was lost in time, which is possible. Or let's not go into details about how he won. I mean, Caesar gave us a 7-page description of how he built a bridge. You know, so I imagine that a lot of the stuff wasn't covered in detail because Octavian would not want it thus.
Or Agrippa would not want it thus.
There you go. Good point.
I've got a quote it's actually in my notes for much later on, but I'm going to pull it forwards now because it's worth commenting. Let me see. Aha! So this takes place later on when Agrippa has another successful engagement that I won't spoil for you. But Dio has some insights into him. He says that Agrippa didn't pursue the enemies after he'd defeated them. For he was wont to say to his intimate friends that most men in positions of power wish no one to be superior to themselves, but attend personally without the use of agents to most matters. Think about Caesar, did everything himself. To all, in fact, that afford them an easy victory and assign the more difficult and extraordinary tasks to others. And if they ever do find themselves obliged to entrust an enterprise of the better sort to their assistants, they are irritated and displeased at the fame these subordinates win. And although they do not pray that they may be defeated and fare badly, yet they do not choose to have them win a complete success and secure glory from it. His advice, therefore, was that the man who expected to come out alive should relieve his masters of undertakings which involve great difficulty and reserve for them the successes. And Dio continues, speaking on a personal note, "As for me, I know that all this is naturally so, and that Agrippa paid heed to these principles." So Agrippa was a smart motherfucker. He's like, I need to be successful enough for Octavian. Not too successful. Yeah. Don't want to rub his face in how fucking good I am.
I will carry you to the finish line, and then I will respectfully, sir, put you down and allow you to cross and break the tape. Congratulations.
Congratulations, yeah.
And that way you live a very long time.
Well done, Mr. Burns. Okay, let's stop for a second and just talk a little bit about a bio of Marcus Agrippa, huh?
All right.
So he was born, we think, somewhere between the 23rd of October and the 23rd of November in either 64, 63, or 62 BCE in an unknown location.
Mm-hmm.
64 BCE, of course, was when Octavian was born, in the year of the reign of the consul of Dicero. So he was roughly the same age, but we don't really know exactly how old he was.
Right.
His father was a nobody, which we think his name might have been Lucius Vipsanius Agrippa, but we know nothing about him. This is how obscure Agrippa's line was.
Wow.
He had an elder brother whose name was also Lucius Vipsanius Agrippa and a sister named Vipsania Polla. The family wasn't very prominent, obviously, in Roman public life, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they were poor. They were provincials.
Right.
But they must have had some cash because they were later raised to equestrian rank, which listeners know is the second tier of the Roman elite after the patricians and the senators, which means they were pretty rich.
Right.
Another indication that they probably had some cash is that Agrippa was educated at the same school in Rome that Octavian went to.
That says something.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like going to an elite private school in Manhattan.
It's just that nobody, London. Right, it's just that nobody in their family had achieved high office, and so their names up until that point were not worthy to be remembered.
If Cicero didn't write about it... Then,
you did that as shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was about the same age as Octavian. They apparently went to school together. They became close friends. Then Agrippa, when he hit the right age, went off to fight with Julius Caesar in the Civil War. But his elder brother fought on Pompey the Great's side in the Civil War.
Oh.
Was actually fighting for Cato in Africa. And when Cato's forces were defeated, and Cato very memorably took a sword and plunged it into his own stomach and then kept cutting and pulled his entrails out to make sure they couldn't put him back together again. Agrippa's brother was taken prisoner but freed after either Agrippa or Octavian, depending on the source, asked Julius Caesar to let him go. And we know that Caesar was happy to happy to forgive. Love thine enemies was Julius Caesar's motto. Once, yeah.
Yes, once.
We don't really know if Agrippa fought against his brother in Africa, but he probably did serve in Caesar's campaigns around that period. And as I mentioned before, Caesar regarded him highly enough to send him with Octavian to Apollonia to further their military training. Tom Holland, in his book Dynasty, says it well. Agrippa, far from cringing before the nobility, regarded himself as the authentic representative of his city's antique virtues. Aggressive in his humility, he was willing, literally, to plumb the depths in the service of the Roman people.
Mm.
And as we will see as the series goes on, he, you know, whether it was military matters, civil matters, engineering,
boom.
You name it. He could fucking do it all. He was a triple threat.
And an admiral. But before this is all said and done, he's going to earn his admiral cap.
Yeah.
There's just, I'm going to ruin everything you've just said. I apologize. But the series Rome that we've talked about a couple times, I just love when they're having the big fighting scene. And, the fighting that's already done. And
Agrippa being played by Tom from Downton Abbey.
Yeah. So they're having the fight, and Caesar's sick, and he can't go fight. I can't remember. It was over in Greece, and so he turns to Agrippa, the character, and he goes, off you go, or something. And he goes, thank you, and you could just see that he was so excited to go get into battle. And Caesar's sitting there on his horse, as pale as can be. His stomach is probably upset. I really like the way that scene just encapsulated. You know, one of them has all this physical limitations, and the other one is just balls ready to go, balls on fire, just boom. He's like, thank you, and he just pulls out a sword and takes off. I just thought that was very indicative of the relationship that Caesar is, to a certain degree, has to hide from the general public.
And I think that Agrippa obviously understood this about Octavian. He understood that Octavian was weak and timid and a bit of a coward when it came to military affairs, so he was going to be his man. They had an amazing bromance. They were like Paul Rudd and Zach Galifianakis or Seth Rogen, probably. You know, they had a real bromance, man, where I don't think there was anything gay about it. There's no indication. There's no rumors of that even. He just knew that, look, I need to look after my mate.
Right. I think they complemented each other well, because when you are not in a military situation, Octavian is brutal. He is ruthless. He is clever. He is thinking four steps ahead. He is analyzing. He might have a team. We don't know if it's Team Caesar or just him or whatever. But he is going to show himself to be a shrewd politician, a quick learner, and someone who plans very well. It's just when it comes to matters of military that's just not his thing for whatever reason. It could have been real. It could have been just in his head. He could have had real physical limitations. We don't know. But they just fitted each other, complemented each other real well. And why ruin a good thing, especially when you're both young? You've got this tremendous position in society that you should not have for another 20, 25 years. Don't, you know, if it isn't broke, don't fix it. And right now they're just really helping each other to the best of their ability.
And despite what you might believe from watching HBO's Rome, evidence that I could find that Agrippa was in love with Octavian's sister, Octavia.
Yeah, yeah.
Although she was hot, I'll give her that.
She was, yeah.
But, you know, it's possible. I mean, again, he grew up with Octavian. They were friends. Yeah. He probably knew Octavia from, you know, a very young age.
Right.
Maybe he did have a thing for her, but there's certainly no evidence of that in anything I read.
Right. And because she's a female, she is going to be nothing more than a political pawn to her brother in his position. So unless it benefits Caesar, no marriage could ever happen, because, you know, women at that point were tools and nothing more.
But up until Julius Caesar was assassinated,
she
was a nobody. Octavian was a nobody. She was a nobody.
That's true.
They could have married, perhaps, for love, but then Caesar dies, Octavian becomes the man, and all of a sudden...
You got to pay the price.
She is now, she is now a political tool to be used.
Right.
All right, anyway, we'll talk about more Agrippa stuff as we go on. We've talked about where Sexy is. We've talked about where Octavian is. Now we need to talk about where the bull.
The bull.
Anthony. Hey, I always think Mark Anthony is talking like this, you know. It's, hey.
Me too.
Hey, Marcus Antonius, nice to meet you. Hey.
A streetcar named Desire. Who's the actor?
Brando.
I always picture that. I always picture that.
It's a combination of Stella and hey, Adrian.
Yeah, exactly. I want to know how intelligent he was. I get that he was a good organizer. I don't think he was a brilliant soldier, but I would generally like to know. He doesn't seem to have a book in his hand all the time, and you can't compare him to Caesar because that's just not fair to anybody. But I truly wonder where he was at on the general intelligence scale, because I think Octavian is shrewd and is going to get intelligent, but I think Mark Anthony just relied on his brawn and his family connections. But I don't know where, I would just like to know where he's at on that.
2 foot penis.
There you go. That's all you need.
Hey,
that's all.
Check it out.
Anyway, so Anthony and Octavia, his new wife, Octavia.
Oh, I just have to add this. For you and I, we say, don't let the little head do the thinking for the big head. But for his situation, it's actually accurate. It's reverse. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Anthony, Octavia, and Antony's penis went to spend the winter of 39-38 BCE in Athens.
Right.
And when he was there, he had a good fucking time, basically.
He went in party mode.
Yeah.
It was 38 BC.
He's got a new wife. She's probably, you know, I don't know, 20, 21, maybe. She's a couple of years younger than Octavian, I think.
There you go.
Antony's probably 40 by this stage, early 40s, maybe.
Yeah.
Man.
He's happy. He's looking forward to this. We're going to go to Athens, and then we're going to go downtown.
Yeah, you know how they do it in Greece, baby. Greek style. Bend over and bite the pillow. Appian writes, Antony again dispatched his lieutenants in all directions and arranged everything else as he wished. He set up kings here and there as he pleased. on condition of their paying a prescribed tribute. In Pontus, Darius, the son of Fuckknuckles and grandson of Mithridates.
Mm-hmm.
He was originally known as Fuckknuckles the Second, but he was like, I think I'll just call myself Darius. You know, Darius is just better than Fuckknuckles the Second.
Yeah, any day.
And in Idumea and Samaria, he appoints Herod as king.
Uh-oh.
AKA Herod the Great, AKA Herod, famous in the Bible for ordering the massacre of the children at the birth of Jesus because he got a rumor that the king had been born, which, by the way, modern historians consider to be total fiction, as there is no evidence for a massacre of any children outside of the Gospel of Matthew. Even Josephus doesn't mention it. So, yeah, it's probably just taken straight from the Old Testament with the, you know, the massacre of infants. Right. I think it was Moses, when Moses was born. As many things in the New Testament are, they're just the Old Testament rewritten for the Gentiles.
Ave, listeners, and welcome to the story of me, the Life of Augustus podcast. Did you know that when I was 24 years old, I shaved my beard for the first time, thus demonstrating the end of my mourning for my slain father, Gaius Julius Caesar? True story. And did you know that I used a razor from Harry's.com? Equally true. How did I get hold of a Harry's, you ask? Which, by the way, gave me the closest, most comfortable shave in the history of Rome. Easy. I called the sacred birds to me. You can't throw a rock in the ancient world and not hit a sacred bird. I had one fly at the speed of light into the future and get me one. That's science, which we stole from the Greeks. Anyways, why did I get a razor from Harry's? Simple. Unum, their German-engineered five-blade cartridges are of the highest quality. Now, as my father could tell you, the Germans know what they're doing. Any steel coming from them, when it's invented, will be pure quality. Plus, the factory in Germany owned by Harry's is over 100 years old. Duo, free shipping throughout the US of A country I hope to conquer in the future. Trace, since Harry's cuts out the middleman, their factory direct prices will save you half off the leading brands. Quator, money back guarantee if you're not satisfied. Quinque, their amazing starter kits, and make sure you check out the Truman one, which comes with a razor handle, three of Harry's five-blade German-engineered razors, and moisturizing shave cream are only $15. But if you use the promo code LOC at checkout for your first purchase, you get $5 off that. That's a Magnus deal. Make sure you check out their new Truman razor with its rubberized non-slip grip for extra control. It's perfect for shaving in the shower or in the large bath at the palace. Oh, you don't have one of those. Sucks to be a pleb. Anyway, pull your chariot over right now. Go to harrys.com. That's HARRYS.com. Look around. You can normally be done in about 30 seconds. Get yourself a starter kit and don't forget the promo code LOC at checkout to save $5 off. See you around the forum.
Thank you. I just want to add one more line from Arian, and then you can go on. So I like what Arian writes, and being kind of, you know, honest.
By Arian, writes, you mean Appian, because Arian wrote about
Appian. Alexander. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yes, the A writer. Mm-hmm. Antony winters at Athens with Octavia.
You're just giving Rob Irwin more material here, man.
The A writer.
Look, anybody who's born 2,000 years ago and that we're talking about them, I think it's okay to get them confused. I think it's okay for Caesar and Alexander to fight on our podcast because it's just so long ago, you know, whatever. But anyway, so Appian writes, so Octavian, Shet, Antonius winters at Athens with Octavia just as he spent the previous one at Alexandria with Cleopatra, merely looking over the reports sent from the army. And like you were saying, he's just wheeling and dealing. He's making kings. He's breaking kings. He's getting people to pay him. He's having a good time, but he's doing it from a chair. He's sending others out. And like you said, he is just partying in Athens, waiting for the winter to get over with so he can really get to work.
Yeah, but you missed out the best part of that line from Appian.
Uh-huh.
Merely looking over the report sent from the army, exchanging the display of a commander for the simplicity of private life, wearing the square-cut pallium and the attic shoe, and with no crowd at his doors. He went out in like manner, without the insignia of office, accompanied by two friends and two attendants, to the discussions and lectures of the public teachers. He took his meals in the Greek fashion, which means up the bum, passed his leisure time with Greeks, mm-hmm. and enjoyed their festivals in company with Octavia, with whom he was very much in love, being by nature excessively fond of women.
Mm. And there's, and after a couple more pages, paragraphs, and then it says, at the end of the winter, he was like another man, because that's when he's going to take off all the stuff, put his uniform back on, and get into the business of pretty much, you have to be honest, ruling his kingdom, or at least his half of the Roman Empire. That is pretty much his kingdom.
Yeah. But while he's still in Athens, the Athenians name the couple, he and Octavia, beneficent gods, and Antony Woo! Was declared the new god Dionysus, and mm-hmm. they staged a ceremonial marriage between him and Athena, the Kinky. Goddess of the city.
Right.
Now just stop for a second, listeners of our Alexander series, and think about that for a second. Remember a few hundred years before this, how the Athenians felt about Alexander declaring himself a god.
Right.
They were like, that was a fucking heresy.
Exactly.
They were up in arms when...
Who do you think you are? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, when Philip had a statue made of himself that was carried in the procession. Right. Alexander...
Placed with the gods.
The Greeks were incensed. Yeah. Alexander might have been killed, poisoned, assassinated because he was thinking himself a god. Here we are, a few short centuries later, the Athenians are saying, hey, Antony, want to be a god? You can be a god? Sure, no worries.
In fact, we will marry you to the namesake of our city. My only thought on that is, like, they know that when Mark Antony gets back into commander mode, the first thing he's going to be doing is asking for a tax or a big wad of money or whatever, and maybe they're just trying to placate him. But yeah, for them to totally flip like that in just a matter of a couple hundred years, I don't know. You do what you have to do to survive the day and try to get along as best you can, especially when you're not the one in charge anymore, and they haven't been in charge for quite some time.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess once there's a precedent set,
yeah,
it becomes easier and easier the next time to call a living man a god. But we know too that Alexander in the latter part of his life associated himself with Dionysus, and I've done a lot of stuff about Dionysus on the Alexander series, so I won't repeat it here. If you're not listening to the Alexander series, then that's
shame on you.
That's your embarrassment. But at least Alexander deserved it. He had conquered the known world.
Yeah.
What the fuck has Antony done?
He showed up.
Yeah, he showed up.
Now, he won the East. Yeah.
Antony didn't wait until he put his commander garb back on before he hit the Athenians up for money. He said, you want me to marry Athena? I'll do it, but you're going to have to pay me a dowry of 4 million sesterces. And they were like, on second thoughts, he goes, you already said it.
Already sent out the wedding invitations.
Spat in her hand and shook.
That's right.
So he's already hitting them up for cash. Just any fucking pretext, man. Any pretext. Now, you're right. At the end of the winter, he gets ready to go and fight the Parthians, but he's already had one of his guys go out and do some of the hard work for him.
Yeah.
He sent Ventidius
mm-hmm.
out to fight them. Did you get much information on Ventidius's activities?
I the only thing I got was that by the time that Mark Antony is ready to go, he has driven the Parthian invaders from the Roman provinces. I think we're talking mostly about Syria here. And again, I know you're going to go into detail about that, but then I have a question to follow up. So some of the work has been done. The immediate threat to his half of the Roman Empire, if I can use that term, is secure for now. The Parthians have been pushed out, but there's so much more he has to do to secure his half long term.
Yeah, so he sent Ventidius And, you know, I think we'd mentioned in an earlier episode that Labia Anus, Pussy Bum the Second, son of the great Pussy Bum, was out helping the Parthians.
Mm-hmm.
So Ventidius comes upon him and sort of surprises him. He's like, oh, fuck, I didn't say, what? The Romans sent an army? Oh, I never even thought.
Didn't see that coming.
Yeah. What? And he didn't have his Parthian troops with him, and he was outnumbered. His troops get destroyed, but Pussy Butt goes on the run. And I love this. He is actually captured by one of Caesar's freed slaves, Demetrius, who finds him hiding and has him arrested. And I didn't find out what actually happened to him. I assume he was executed. But yeah. There you go. So that's the end of Pussy Butt the Second. Pussy Butt the Minor, the small Pussy Butt.
Junior.
Pussy Butt Junior.
Junior, yeah.
So, and that was the end of the Pussy Butt line. I wonder if there's anyone on the planet today called Labianus. We should really try and
bring them on
the
show.
Get them on the show as a guest.
That's right. So what have you dealt with? Your name? Yeah.
They'd be like, no, really, you're the first person that's ever mentioned it. But as Dio writes, Ventidius himself received no reward for these achievements from the Senate, since he was not acting with independent authority, but as lieutenant to another. Antony, however, was honored with eulogies and thanksgivings. Antony doesn't even have to fucking show up.
He's too busy marrying a city. Someone else is doing the work, and he still gets all the praise. So let me ask you this. As someone who has their own company, as someone who has seen things in the world and you've done things, you're self-employed, but you've been employed by others. I just want to get your take on this. And this part here that you just read reminds me of when Sulla was working for Gaius Marius when he was still learning the ropes of how to be a general and whatnot. When Gaius Marius is fighting Jugurtha in the Numidian War in North Africa, Sulla is actually the one who captured Jugurtha to end the war. But because Gaius Marius was the consul, he was the general, he was the guy in charge, he gets all the credit. So at what point do you draw the line? Well, I'm in charge of the entity that got the job done, but I didn't do it myself. I mean, should, in your opinion, should Ventidius have received some of the praise, or does it just not fucking work that way and that's just
but
the world?
But it does work that way multiple times. We see in these stories where, and we'll see it again, I think, as the next few episodes go on, where one of the underlings gets sent to do a job, does a great job, and is given a triumph or is given some sort of reward because his boss goes, you know what? Yeah. In fact, Agrippa was awarded a triumph for his success in Gaul and chose not to take it because
Smart. He
didn't want to show up Octavian.
Right.
So it was entirely possible for a subordinate to be given awards. If his commander was a good guy, it was like, yeah, you know what? Fuck it, you deserve it, man.
Right.
Antony
now, I
was
agree
not
with
that kind of guy. Hey, no, right, you look good. That's hey, you give it to me. Hey, I'll take that. Hey, don't worry about it. Forget about it.
Right. So that was my question. So what does that say about Marcus Antonius that he takes all the credit and doesn't even bring up the guy's name? But again, because now that Caesar's gone, the Senate as we know it is gone, all of the old established ways of Rome and how you rise up to the ranks is gone. Yeah, it's pretty much going to a certain degree come down to those who were in charge, even if they don't deserve to be in charge, acknowledging the achievements of others. And so now, in some ways, the playing field is a little bit more level, and that if you've got the goods and you can deliver the goods, the chances are if you have the right kind of commander, you might get noticed, you might get rewarded. So literally the Rome that we know and shouldn't love is truly upside down if common people can be acknowledged and raised up to the rank of senator or whatever. But yeah, that just says something about Mark Antony that he was not going to share the praise for that accomplishment.
It says to me that his dick wasn't as big as rumor has it, because that's
a dick move.
It's a dick move. It's the action of somebody with a little dick. Really?
Right, exactly.
You have
exactly.
to take all the credit exactly. for everything, even when you don't do it. It means you've got you got a dick complex.
Yeah.
Not good a complex point. Dick, like people who get it bifurcated. Yeah. They have it cut down the middle for some reason, don't really understand it. That would be complex. No.
Yes.
Just to wrap up this episode. So, as you mentioned, Antony's job is to go and finish the whole Parthian thing properly. Still quite a bit of work to do, but I'm sort of fascinated by the fact that it was Caesar who was going to go do the Parthians, and you would think that Octavian would want to go and finish that job, seeing it was his daddy's, adopted daddy's mission. But no, Antony is going to go do it instead of Octavian. I know he was sort of Caesar's co-consul, but really.
Yeah.
But I just want to finish up by saying that at this stage, according to Dio, the people revolt again and some interesting new laws are passed. He says the populace revolted against the tax gatherers. Started off this episode by talking about new taxes. Well, they finally were like, oh, not fuck you, more taxes. Who oppressed them severely and came to blows with the men themselves, their assistants, and the soldiers who helped them collect the money. Now, I can imagine that collecting taxes in those days wasn't like collecting taxes today, where people just willingly send their money in because they're scared of going to prison or fines or whatever. These days, you had to send somebody around with a couple of soldiers. It was a bit more like the mafia collecting on protection money.
Organized mafia,
yeah, from the streets. It was like, give me your money or else.
That's right.
And so it started to get fairly violent. But he also says that 67 praetors, one after another, were appointed and held office.
Oh, my God.
One person,
because they're the ones who are collecting, yeah.
One person was chosen to be quaestor while still accounting as a boy and did not obtain the standing of a juvenis until the next day. And another, who had been enrolled in the Senate, desired to fight as a gladiator.
Oh, my God.
Just imagine if senators in your country or mine were like, hey, you know what? I've got to go fight. I got to throw my hat in the ring in the heavyweight tournament. I'm going to go up against, Merriweather or Pacquiao or something. Right.
I would rather fight in the ring against that lion than go collect taxes or work in the Senate. What does that tell you about how things bad things are now?
Well, it was bad enough that they had to pass laws to prevent this. He says, not only was he prevented, however, from doing this, but an act was passed prohibiting any senator from fighting as a gladiator, slave from serving as a lictor, and any burning of dead bodies from being carried on within 2 miles of the city.
What the hell? Jeez. This place is falling apart quick. And here Caesar is getting married to other people's wives, you know, just had a baby 3 days ago, and they're partying and they're having a good time and feasting, and everybody is starving to death. I mean, yeah, he's lucky he didn't get a knife jabbed in his ribs. But, I mean, the city as we know it, Rome, is just falling apart. The institutions don't matter anymore. What the hell else can go wrong? And we're about to find out.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where we'll wrap up episode 21.
Excellent.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you to our sponsors.
Thank you to everybody but Rob.
We'll see you soon, folks. Go listen to The Cold War Show at coldwar.com.